to Washington, D.C., and Linda Kenyon.
Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for that, Robin. Nothing like an uplifting animal story for me to start my day.
There you go.
Who doesn't love a puppy? Come on.
Really. We've got a new puppy, a Bernese Mountain Dog. And it's about, I don't know, about 4 months old now. It seems like it was yesterday we got him, and weighs twice as much as he did when we got him.
Yeah, you know? I was going to say, that's going to be a big dog.
Yeah, I know. My wife thought it was important that we buy a $2,000 dog that will eat us out of house and home. And I, you know, when mom is happy, everybody's happy.
There you go. All right. So you were up late last night.
I seem to be up late every night, up early every morning. You know, covering Congress and covering the White House, it's a 24/7 job. And in fact, I just got some messages from one of my many bosses about 4 hours ago. Let's see, that would have been, about 6:30 our time, about when I was going to file on a certain story, and I'm like, I'm still sleeping.
It looks like the rescission bill is headed back to the House.
It does. The Senate was able to pass it. That's the rescinding of funds Congress originally allocated for certain agencies and departments. Some of this codifies the cuts that were made by the Department of Government Efficiency, or the DOGE. It was touch and go there for a while. It did not appear that all of the Republicans were in favor of this. It turns out that all of the Republicans were not in favor of this. We had Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. They did not support the rescissions package. But because this package was already passed in the House, and the Senate made some changes, it now goes back to the House. And I suspect that the House will pass it rather quickly, even though they may express some displeasure with what the Senate did to the bill. But they have some self-imposed deadline of passing this by midnight, Friday. So they're probably going to rubber stamp it at some point, either late today or early tomorrow. It is Thursday. And I do have to remind people that on Thursday in Washington, D.C., it is time to get out of town, especially in the summer. Everybody wants to go to the beach. And so they get in their cars on Thursday afternoons. And the senators are no exception. Either they're going to the beach or they're flying back to their home districts, because the wafting jet fuel from nearby Ronald Reagan National Airport is very strong and can be felt at the Capitol building. So they want to finish their work today.
I guess the big piece of this whole thing is defunding, or attempting to defund, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yeah, that is part of it. There's some other clawbacks of funding. That one, however, became rather controversial. Some Republicans were not happy with the clawback of money. For example, the senator from South Dakota and North Dakota, rather. And there was a lot of consternation about that, because he felt that a lot of tribal lands, they only have public broadcasting, and this is their only connection with important news and information, some of which can save lives, for example, in the case of a flash flood or some kind of a catastrophic weather event. Where do you get your information for evacuation or to shelter in place? From your radio stations. And if they were to be cut off because there's no funding, what would happen to these folks? So some of that money was put back from the rescission or the clawback package. Clawing back money does give an interesting visual, but nonetheless, that's kind of what it is. And so that was put back in, not as much as before, but still some funding was not completely obliterated from the rescissions package. And so it did pass. It only needed a simple majority to pass. The Democrats lost a vote, by the way, because one of the Senator Smith, was hospitalized, and so her vote was not able to be cast. She had to leave the Capitol early yesterday afternoon, Tina Hyde-Smith. The doctor suggested she go to the hospital. We don't know exactly what the problem was, but nonetheless, that meant that the Republicans didn't have to worry about the very, very close margin and the possibility of having to call the vice president in, who was in Pennsylvania yesterday, to cast a tie-breaking vote.
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting certainly funds an awful lot, but that's not the only funding source for all that PBS and NPR does. There's a lot of local
right.
and a lot of foundations that are still a part of that. And I would imagine that they are already trying to work with getting more local funding for these radio and television stations that serve so many people. So I wouldn't count them out entirely. They may have to shelve some of their programming, but they're not going to go away.
No, and some of the programming, by the way, that is at risk now is children's television, educational programs. But I also remind folks that not only do they have corporate sponsors, individuals also donate.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have fundraising appeals from time to time. So they're not completely sunk, but they are hampered.
And this is money that... is actually at the national level to create programming that's rebroadcast on some of these stations or most of these stations. So, you know, I wouldn't count public broadcasting out entirely. If they can survive long enough. I understand there's also a lawsuit that that Corporation for Public Broadcasting has filed against the Trump administration to stop this. But is that moot now that they have defunded the organization?
That's a good question. I suspect that the lawsuit will go forward, but there, it will be up to the judge to decide if they're still standing in the case. It does hamper the case. Legal experts could answer that better than I.
It seems like with all the things going on right now, what seems to have captivated everybody's attention is Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, much to the dismay and anger of the President of the United States. Now, Jeffrey Epstein, although everybody probably knows who he is at this point, but let's just refresh. He was a convicted sex offender, sex trafficker, child sex trafficking. He was serving time in prison. He's a billionaire financier. He died in prison. There's some questions about the circumstances around his death. Was it suicide or otherwise? Nonetheless, he died in prison. And the problem is the Epstein files. Now, before President Trump was elected the second time, there was before his second term, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of conspiracy theories out there that there were Democrats on the Epstein's client list. And people, including Kash Patel, the FBI director, his deputy director, Don Bongino, and the now Attorney General Pam Bondi, were all in on the effort to release the Epstein files. In many cases, buying into the deep state conspiracy theories, and probably mostly in order to embarrass Democrats if they were on the client list. Elon Musk dropped a bomb when he left the White House in a very outward fashion and suggested that Donald Trump was in the Epstein files. Now, we do know that Donald Trump and Melania Trump many years ago did socialize with Epstein. There are many photographs of all of them together at various parties and functions. So that in and of itself was not really the shock. The shock, of course, was whether Donald Trump was implicit in some of the activities that were hosted by Jeffrey Epstein. Now that Donald Trump is in the White House, the Attorney General now is Pam Bondi, and she initially said that all the Epstein files would be released. She had the report on her desk. She had the client list on her desk. And now she's saying there is no client list. And that has riled a lot of the president's supporters. And so the president is now very angry at his supporters. So number one, he blames the Democrats. But number two, he blames his supporters who he feels have turned against him. He says, he spoke to reporters in the Oval Office yesterday, he said it's all a hoax. It was started by Democrats. It's been run by Democrats for 4 years. And then he said, by the way, while the Crown Prince and Prime Minister of Bahrain was sitting in the Oval Office beside him, he said, and I quote, some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net, and so they try and do the Democrats' work. The Democrats are good for nothing other than these hosts, these hoaxes. He called it a scam. He griped that his, as I will say, and I will leave out the expletives, he said, my past supporters have bought into this bleep, hook, line, and sinker.
I'm kind of like speechless on all of this because it is such a blatant denial of something that appears to be to just about everybody, including Trump supporters, as something at least fact-based.
Something rotten in Denmark, you know, is what people think, whether it's conspiracy theory about Epstein's death or whatever, but it could be settled by releasing the information, right, if there's nothing there.
Right. So why not just release it? Yeah. So there's people on the right side of the aisle who are saying Pam Bondi needs to be fired. The president has steadfastly thrown his support behind Pam Bondi and attacked those who say she should be fired. There are various right-wing folks, for example, a very influential right-wing person, Laura Loomer, who is often here at the White House, counseling the president on various things, usually personnel matters. Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado, they have joined the fray calling for the appointment of a special counsel to investigate the Epstein matter. And the president just wants this to go away. It's grown legs, and it's taken off. And the more that the president blames the Democrats for it, the problem is a lot of Republicans are in on calling for an investigation, and they want the files released. So this is a major split within the MAGA universe, and I would say it's probably the biggest split that I've seen so far since Donald Trump took office the second time.
Could this be President Trump's Watergate?
I don't know. I mean, President Trump has an amazing ability to get out of various legal entanglements, so maybe not. But time will tell. The more this brews, the more it takes on a life of its own. And it could be a lot of nothing.
You know,
it's
interesting because the president usually sets the pace for what the narrative is, and this is the first time he hasn't been able to change the narrative. He keeps coming back, and you know, now he's telling his base they're off base.
Yeah, I will tell you that another little development that happened last night, which surprised many of us, although it shouldn't have, is that Maureen Comey, she is a prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. The name Comey may sound familiar to you because it is. She was fired yesterday by the Trump administration. She prosecuted Epstein. Now, not only is there that connection, but she is the daughter of former FBI Director James Comey, who President Trump famously fired during his first term in office. Now, the scuttlebutt is that he just couldn't stand to have a Comey in his administration. Even though she wasn't working directly for him, she was working for the Justice Department, and in this case in the Southern District of New York, not only prosecuting Epstein, but also the Sean Diddy Combs case. So she's a highly successful, highly aggressive prosecutor, but was fired because, was it because of the Epstein case, or was it because she's a Comey and the president couldn't stand to have a Comey in his view, I suppose.
Let's spend a couple of minutes on the Fed chair. Is the president in a position to fire Jerome Powell?
he keeps floating that he is, then he isn't, then he isn't, then he is. The Fed chairman is an independent entity. The Federal Reserve is independent. The president of the United States cannot, by law, fire the Fed chairman unless it's for cause. And the president has been very outspoken. He says repeatedly he feels that Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is doing a terrible job. He badmouths him all over the place at every chance he can, and often in as public a way as possible, calls him a stupid person, et cetera, because he wants him to lower interest rates. Now, the Federal Reserve is responsible for setting monetary policy. The Fed chairman presides over a Fed board of governors. He's not the only person who makes these decisions. He just is the front person. So he says, we have inflationary pressures. We have uncertainty created by the tariffs. And as long as we have this uncertainty, we cannot lower interest rates, because if we were to do that, we would fuel inflation. But the president wants the interest rates lower. And as a result, he continues to attack Jerome Powell. And now he's saying, asked directly in the Oval Office yesterday, will you fire him? And he goes, no. And then he goes, well, I don't know. And then he says, I can't, but then maybe, you know, for cause. And then he goes into the conversation about the renovation of the Fed headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Now, that building was built in 1937. It's undergoing a major renovation that started in 2018, I believe. President Trump appointed, by the way, the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, in 2018. And there have been tremendous cost overruns. Well, part of that is because once you tear into a building that was built in 1937, you discover all sorts of things like asbestos. Oh. So that's been very expensive to remove. But the president feels that there's fraud going on there, and he wants to hang it on Jerome Powell. And so that seems to be the tactic right now.
We hear about fraud in Medicaid, Medicare. That seems to be that's something you can suspect until you actually dig it out and find it. So it's an allegation.
Well, they would have to prove it. Yeah.
And it's one of those words that it has a connotation that makes us think, oh boy, criminal activity going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does float that idea, and Jerome Powell. I mean, does anybody think that the Federal Reserve chairman or the chairman of any federal agency is actually out there with a pick and a shovel and doing the renovations and responsible for the daily, you know, the daily work? No, he's too busy, you know, working on monetary policy. The cabinet secretary is not responsible for physically moving the furniture around and building the cubicles. You know, that's not how it works. But the president seems to want to hang the word fraud around as a yoke around Jerome Powell's neck. Now, the problem with firing the Fed chairman, and I do have to emphasize this, is that it could roil the financial markets and could show that there's a certain instability in monetary policy in the United States of America. And that's one of the reasons why the president has been hesitant. I do think that if he could, he would do it if there were no roadblock standing in his way. Yeah.
Now, yesterday, in regard to this monetary policy, we had a report, I recall, John, that said that Powell is holding back to see what effects the tariffs have on roiling the market, and that if we didn't have these tariffs going on, we would probably have interest rates lowered by now. So, it just depends on the perspective. The president wants tariffs and he wants the interest rates lowered, too.
Yeah. Well, the president has repeatedly said that the tariffs will not cause inflation, because the companies, the countries, et cetera, that send goods to the United States and they are imported into the United States are the ones who are going to absorb the higher costs, not the consumer. But that flies in the face of basic economic policy. How long will a company, you know, eat the higher cost of a tariffed product? Eventually, it gets passed on to the consumer.
Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
You are welcome. Tomorrow's another day. Today, we just have to get through it.
Okay.
Thanks, Linda.